A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how the devil are you doing? What's going on?
I'm good, Christopher. Don't mind admitting that I was already in my car, ready to hightail it home from the studio. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I got to Abroad Japan and I. So, yeah, apologies for keeping you waiting. But I can't help it because I'm an idiot.
Indeed. It's fine. It's Monday.
It's Monday.
We don't normally record on a Monday. I'll let you off this time.
Monday morning.
But you're in the studio.
It's harder and harder. And yes, I am coming from the studio. It's we just recorded the popular football podcast, The Football Ramble, and it was shambolic at best, but that's how we like it here at The Football Ramble and Stack HQ. But yeah, it's the start of a very busy week for Stack, because we're going to be down at the N1 Business Design Centre, or whatever the hell it's called, doing the big podcast show in London, where I've got my big telly, I spoke about last year on the show. It's a show that me and you kind of joined together, and I interviewed you on stage with a lot of your fans. So it was really fun. So this time around, we're not going to have any Abroad Japan fans at the stand, so I don't know who I'm going to be quite frank. Got it.
Yeah, it was quite cool last year, wasn't it? I remember we had a really nice guy come down from Scotland. He came all the way down from Scotland to say hello and... Yeah, by bus. Good God. And we had about, I think we had about 50 to 100 people turn up. And then Pete and I gave a speech or like a talk, a discussion for half an hour. But I remember I was like jet lagged and ruined. And I had my brand new Fitbit on at the time. And I remember watching my heart rate just go up and up and up. and it was like 170. And you were like, "She get an ambulance?" And it was like...
you did try and arrest it slightly by having a couple of ciders, which did help for a while. So
I did.
Look, if those of you with any kind of heart arrhythmias, get involved in the cider, which is quite hard to find in the business design centre of a May summer's day.
Yeah, it was one of those things. I'd never done a meetup in the UK. I'd never met viewers or fans or listeners in the UK, right? Yeah. And I was a little bit nervous, understandably. I didn't know if anyone was going to show up. I had images of you and I just hosting like an empty room. But then it got so full and there was a queue and some people couldn't get in. The only thing I wanted to do at the event was go and watch the Louis Theroux talk. But I missed that.
That's right,
because I was drinking too much of the aforementioned cider.
Stars like that are always kind of like, they're always the main big swingers and stuff like that. Like, it's the one that everybody wants to go, but it's quite hard to kind of get hold of tickets for it. They're the ticket events, really. But we had a sellout. You had a sellout.
I want to be a big swinger. I want to be like Louis Theroux, but I've got my first step to being Louis Theroux because, look, Pete, it's the Abroad Japan book in my hand, right here,
Chris,
in the flesh, in the pages.
In the pages.
300 and pages of excitement and wonder. Right. It smells quite nice.
Yeah, nice.
Books smell nice, doesn't it?
Is it... Is this the pre-release kind of like draft copy, whatever you call it?
Yeah, it is. I got a copy just to look through and check that it's not a complete disaster. It's really weird, actually, like, because obviously I've written the book on my laptop over many weeks and months. and it's just a Word document.
Yeah.
Like, it's just an endless 80,000 word document. So to have it like in a book form, it's kind of like, wow, I've written a book. How did this bloody happen? And it's also made me realize that the book is remarkably weighted in favor of my first 3 years. Like,
right, yeah.
70% of the book, like the first 200 pages out of a 300-page book, is weighted towards my time in Yamagata as a teacher. Just because that was like the stage in my life here when I was sort of lost and confused and just culture shocked by it all. So it kind of made sense to sort of weight it in those first 3 years, because after that, I think the pace really picks up and it's like 1 year per chapter. But I hope it's a good book. It's quite a scary thing. Like, I promoted it yesterday for the first time. It's available on pre-order. Please go and buy it. Let's not pulp 100,000 books in a factory somewhere like Alan Partridge. Please buy the book. But some encouraging signs. Somebody sent me a photo today about 24 hours after I promoted it, and it's currently ranked at number one on travel writing on Amazon UK and eighth bestseller on Amazon UK overall.
That's
so
awesome.
That is an exciting start.
Is the are we going to be in a situation where you're like Mr. Beast demands of his fans to tidy up the chocolate that he has in the Walmart of this world? Are you going to be asking people to reposition the Bronze Band book in front of more weightier tomes?
I am. Please go in all Waterstones bookshops and rearrange the books. Put mine at the front. No, don't do that. Weirdly,
there was a little bit of like back and forth between you and the publisher about the cover. Did you manage to get that settled in the end?
Yeah, I mean, right now it's just a holding cover, but we've got a really cool an artist, a really great guy called Matt, who I've known for years, and he's done some fantastic book covers. He did Stephen King's book covers recently. It was good for Stephen King. It's good,
good for
me.
For you. And, up like... there with Stephen King. Yeah, write that on the sleeve. Lovely. Yeah.
He's done a good job, but that'll be out soon. Weirdly, though, the book is ranked number three in the gardening section of Amazon, so I'm not quite sure how that happened.
Oh,
I'd like to get the word out now. There are no gardening tips in the Abroad in Japan book. If you want gardening, don't buy my book. You've picked the wrong book.
There's
no gardening.
I'm just saying paper is compostable.
Not what Pete's going to do with his copy of my book.
I'm going to plant it, see if I can grow a Chris Broad knowledge tree.
Indeed. But no, it's cool. One encouraging thing is some authors whose books I read years ago. I think Penguin approached them and just basically threw some books at various people around the world. And but there's two reviews, one by Will Ferguson, who wrote an incredible book called Hokkaido Highway Blues, which I read years ago. And Will Ferguson, great writer, he traveled across Japan, I think from south to north, and followed the sakura, the cherry blossom, as it bloomed right throughout the country.
Nice.
And it's sort of his adventure from the south, like Kyushu, working his way up all the way to Hokkaido. And so I read that. That's a classic. And also Sam Baldwin, he wrote a book called For Fukui's Sake. He got placed in Fukui on the JET program. And I think I read that book as I was just about to leave to come on the JET program, and it got me fired up and sort of excited for my time in Japan. So to see that they've reviewed the book and given it their praise, and that was really kind of awesome and moving. Really exciting. And please buy the book.
Please buy the book. Please,
do it.
Please.
I don't ask much of you, but please. No, hopefully it's good though. And I've got to do an audiobook at some point. When I come back to the UK, I think at the end of August, I've got to sit in a room and read an 80,000 word book, and I don't know how I'm going to do that. Presumably my voice is going to be in ruins by the end of it. I think it takes like 3 or 4 days, right? How long did it take you to do your Football Ramble book?
I think I only read about 40,000 words, and it took me a whole week, so
great.
Good luck with that
I'm fucked then. Brilliant. Well, I'm screwed, but that's exciting. Glad that's out the way. We've got a story this week, though, from Megan. And it begins, "Hello, gentlemen. My name is Megan, and I'm a Canadian ALT from Victoria, currently in Hokkaido." Victoria, same place as Charlotte. Nice place. Although, wherever I go, it's winter, and it's not so nice in winter. Need to go in summer. I've lived here in Hokkaido for the last 2 years, and I did a solo road trip for Golden Week because I'm absolutely terrified of trains and planes during that holiday. I stopped for one night at a weird little hotel in a small onsen town called Kawaiyu Onsen, near Kusharoko. As I was alone, I don't actually know where that is. Kawaii, look that up, Pete. That's your little homework.
It sounds like a Kawaii university.
Yes, it does. As I was alone, I was just going to enjoy my room and the private indoor-outdoor onsen booked with it. Wander the property in town, then make a quick convenience store ramen dinner. The host is this bonfire house outside, and on check-in, he provided guests with little fireworks sparklers. So I was out there with my convenience store drinks, just relaxing. The owner came out, we chatted a bit, a mix of English and Japanese. And then he went back inside and came out and gave me a glass of wine. Amazing. He asked what I would do for dinner, and I told him I'd probably just eat ramen. I think he felt sorry for me because he made me get up, walk across the street, and go to his friend's sushi restaurant. He told the chef to make me anything I wanted and put it on his tab. Then he left because he was waiting for a delivery. I was absolutely stunned and not sure I understood, but the chef just started making me a bunch of nigiri sushi, and I sat at the counter trying whatever he recommended. I wasn't charged or anything, so I wandered out of the restaurant back to my room. I didn't see my host again for the rest of my stay, as it's a fairly hands-off establishment, but when I checked out, there was a present in my shoe cubby. The hotel owner had gifted me a local pottery teacup. Absolutely wild experience. I've never received such random kindness before, so I thought I'd share it. At no point did I get weird or creepy vibes either. He seemed like a genuinely kind person. Have you experienced anything similar from hosts in Japan? Cheers, Megan. That's really nice. There was a bit in the story halfway through where I was like, oh, what's his game
here? What's his plan?
Bringing out the wine. Right. What's going on there? But a nice story. That's a lovely story. There's nothing bad happened. It's a nice story. Nobody got mauled by a wild boar like in last week's episode.
It must be like so refreshing for women to enjoy the pleasantries of a local person and not have to worry about any ulterior. Well, I mean, they'll probably worry about ulterior motives, but actually, there being no ulterior motives is probably something that happens once to a woman in her life.
Indeed. Well, I think it's a lovely story. It's a lovely thing. And we've had so many stories like this over the years on the podcast, and we should compile them and make a really heartwarming book.
Sick and weird country.
A sickeningly happy book. 101 heartwarming stories in Japan. Yeah. It'll be the sequel to my book.
Yeah.
And you can read that. It'll be a great toilet book. But a lovely story there, Megan. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah. Let us know where the place is, though. Did you find where Kawayu?
I did. Well, I'm only on my mobile phone, and I found I thought I'd found it, but that was very much a place in Hawaii. So that's no good. That's no good to anyone. And to be honest, trying to find anything that sounds a little bit like Kauai, it's quite difficult. So Kauai Onsen. It's in Kumano, Tanabe City, Kumano.
Ah,
so there you go.
Kumano.
Yeah.
Where's Kumano? Where's Kumano, Pete?
Isn't that Kyushu? Isn't that where? Oh, no. Oh, God. Hang on. Let me zoom out. Here we are. Zooming out, guys.
Go on, zoom out.
Zooming out.
It's Wakayama. It's Wakayama.
Right, okay. Yeah, good.
I'll beat you to it. I'll beat you to the punch. Right. Wakayama. It's the big prefecture that neither of us have visited. I don't think I've been there once, but it's where the musician hides from, and they've got some nice temples. They've got the really nice Nachi Falls near the waterfall. It's the highest waterfall in Japan. They've got a beautiful shrine in front of it.
Right.
Would love to go. It's on my hit list, on my bucket list.
Pretty close now, aren't you?
Check it out. Marginally closer, yeah. Absolutely love to go. Down to Wakayama. But
go now.
We got a story this
week.
Go
now, mate. Forget about doing your proofreading. Go now.
I'll toss the book aside and get on the first train to Wakayama.
God damn it.
Why not?
Lazy.
It's also got a bad reputation because of the dolphin situation. Remember the dolphin cove? The cove.
Oh, is that where the body was found?
The not so good bit. Yeah, unfortunately. But that being said, I'm doing a Spartan race this week, right? And I'm not prepared for it at all. I'm really not prepared. I'm a little bit worried. Like when I did the last Spartan race, I just finished the cycle across Hokkaido and I've been training like every day. Now I'm a little bit podgy. I've put some of the weight back on. Moving houses to Tokyo, moving apartments has taken its toll. Mm. But there's a slimming miso soup on the horizon here to save the day and help people become slim. There's just one problem. It doesn't actually work. Pete, fill us in on this slimming miracle that isn't the miracle it claims to be.
It's kind of sadly in the same way you see those boxes in 7-Eleven that say Calorie Mate. And I've got no good reason why shortbread should help you slim down at all. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Chris, is there, was there ever any... Because you see, like, Calorie Mate in, like, video games, like Shenmue, I think, had him in. I think Yakuza games obviously had him in. I think you also saw Calorie Mate in a Metal Gear Solid, maybe? Might be wide of the mark on that one. But I'm
possibly, yeah.
That happened. But
possibly.
Yeah, that's... I mean, it's... I mean, it's just... Shortbread just isn't slimming in any way.
No.
I mean, you can pack on.
I've never understood calorie.
Either way. Yes. a consumer watchdog in Japan has fined a soccer-based company about $38,000 for violating a law against misleading advertising after it claimed people could lose weight just by consuming its miso soup. Dr. Miso Shiru soup is apparently a drink, according to the company, W Endless Co. Apparently you can lose weight without any strict food restrictions or exercise. And the agency in question, the Consumer Affairs Agency, said, please stop saying that because that's not the case. It's a lie and you can't repeat improper practices. But the company said, sorry about that. We take this fine order seriously and we'll work to further strengthen compliance and prevent a recurrence. We don't know. I mean, surely compared to drinking... gravy, it will help you lose weight. If you're usually drinking gravy, all in it, right, on the top of it, instead of getting rid of all the packaging and all the marketing spend that they spent in the first place saying that it's you can lose weight with this miso soup, just right on the top, if you are drinking custard, don't do that, drink this and you will lose weight. Just right, if you are drinking custard, or if you're drinking gravy, or if you're eating 3 Big Macs a day, do this instead. And then you don't have to change anything.
True.
Just put packaging over the top of it. Little sticker.
I mean, I think they're actually claiming that you will lose weight by taking this, right? Mm. Rather than this is an alternative to eating just butter
gristle
and fat. Yeah.
Loads of gristle.
I mean, that's not that's completely different. I mean, the number of calories in miso is about 50 calories, right?
It's
so it's
low.
Pretty low calorie.
It's low, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Decent. And you can have it every day and whatnot. Mm. It's supposed to be good for you.
Salty.
But it's very salty. And I'm not the biggest fan of it, admittedly. I don't mind it in the winter when you need to warm up and whatnot. But the idea of miso soup being a fat, like, burning drink, well, that seems like one big... I'm also not encouraged by the fact this company is called W Endless Co. That sounds like the shadiest company ever.
Endless
it's
lies.
It's not like endless nonsense.
Endless bullshit, yeah,
endless yeah. bollocks. Honestly, I'm trying to look up anything I can find out about this company, but... it's not looking good.
It's not good for them.
Oh, they're called Dr. Miso Shiru. And they come in these little sachets that you just like pour in some water, right? But like, it looks good, actually. Yeah.
Oh, back,
it must be good.
In.
It's got Doctor on it.
Yeah,
Dr. Miso.
Dr. Jelly. That's the trick you made as well. You'd be absolutely
exactly
piling through this tough mudder or whatever the hell you're doing. Spartan race, you do it at the weekend. If you had a bit of miso on you in your life. Very dehydrating, though.
I mean... I'm certainly going to need some bloody Dr. Jelly to get through this race. I can't remember what I ate last time. I think I did actually have some energy jelly in the morning. Mm. You got to like ram as many calories down your throat as you can in the morning.
Right.
And so you're sort of all stocked up and ready to go. Carb loading, as we call it. Remember carb loading from the cycle? You got to carb load, Pete. And that's what I need to do this week. Mm. I need to carb all the loads. I need to carb all the loads. What am I on about? I need to load up on all the carbs.
It's Michael Scott eating carbonara in the car park. I got a carb load right before you start. And you're like, oh, God. It's hard, though. It's like time. Like when I play football at the weekends, it's actually quite hard to sort of figure out when I'm supposed to eat. I don't work very hard. I don't run very fast. But it's still 90 minutes of sheer hell, God damn it. And so like you've got to pick your time to eat.
Absolutely, absolutely. Do you think, I mean... So they're being fined, this company. Dr. Miso Shiru is being fined 5 million yen, which is about $38,000. Do you think that's a fair amount to fine them, Pete? Is that a reasonable sum?
It doesn't
they're
seem...
They're taking it seriously.
It's the sort of fine that... If it's the sort of fine that my company could handle, it's not enough, I would say. Because we don't make much money.
Right.
If we'd sort of go... Oh, that is a lot of money, but, you know, lesson learned, slap on the wrist and stuff. I think a miso creating company probably has factories and overheads and income, you know. So I think it probably needed to be more than that.
I mean, I'm kind of encouraged that the Japanese consumer watchdog actually cares, right? Because there must be loads of companies, must be loads of tons of products around the country that make claims. Yeah. And certainly in Japan, there are a lot of companies and a lot of products that claim to have health benefits.
Yes.
But they're kind of vague health benefits, like, oh, it might be good for you.
It must be, right? It must be a real sort of like, it must be really difficult for those. You know those little bottles of kind of like tinctures and hangover cures and stuff you see in 7-Eleven?
Hangover cures, yeah.
In the apothecary section. It's just like a little fridge or a little shelf that just has all kinds of little, it's a sort of little portions you sort of find left behind, a little elf might leave behind in a video game, Golden Axe. Like it's just little tinctures and preparations, and they all just sort of say they do a different thing. You know, restore liver function, restore brain energy, and it's just all just caffeine and sugar in it.
It is basically, yeah. It's just a bucket load of like taurine and caffeine. The most popular ones are Ukon no Chikara, the strength of the Ukon root, basically, and. Just bollocks. Honestly, just like, bollocks. It doesn't taste bad. It kind of tastes a bit like a crappy Red Bull.
Right.
If somebody, like, put some ginger and some just, like, crap in some Red Bull. But people swear by it. A lot of my friends drink it. I think Pete, American Pete, drinks it. Mm. And Ian, I think they drink it. Or they drink another one that's got a little picture of a liver on the can.
Yes.
So it's good for your liver.
Helps you not get a hangover.
Allegedly. But I remember before we had... Before we used to have work parties when I worked at school, teachers would come over and just leave like 3 cans of this stuff on my desk and be like, drink it, Chris. Drink it, Chris-san. There's not much time.
Yeah.
And I would drink it and think, ha-ha, no hangovers for me. I'll have the last laugh. And the next morning, I was just dead still, no impact whatsoever. Or maybe I drank more because I felt like I could. Now that I'd consumed this magical wonder potion, I thought I could probably just drink more. So I don't know. I feel like it's an experiment waiting to happen. Mm. All I know is when I did a video with Connor on his channel about a year or two ago, where we drank every single alcoholic beverage in Japan, at least that we could find, we drank a few cans beforehand. It's kind of very loose scientific experiment.
Yep.
And the results were not good.
Middling.
They were very bad. Right. Yeah. So I've not seen anything to indicate that Ukon no Chikara or any of this stuff helps you, and I've not seen any proof that miso soup
bit
can help you lose weight.
Oh, bit of a giggle.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, anyway, if they did work, I'd bloody get shipping them to the UK right away. We're back just a moment, guys, with the stories, comments and questions in the fax machine.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And we're back with the fax machine. What have we got this week from our listeners, Mr. Donaldson?
We got a message from Usman from London. I know an Usman from London. He's got excellent hair. Hello, contactless Chris and Passmo Pete. What is the state of contactless payments in 2023 Japan? I visited Japan in 2019. Are we going again this August? Is it now viable to just walk around with a phone or a watch to pay for items in the local conveni, or is it still ideal to carry around cash or top up an IC card? Do you have the Apple Pay, the Android Pay, the Google Pay, the other pays?
With all the pays.
All the pays.
We have PayPay.
Right, PayPay.
Literally, the main one is called PayPay. God. Yeah, do you have that?
Another app you got to put on your phone and connect. And then
do you
deposit
have PayPay?
An amount of I remember seeing PayPay around. PayPay.
Dr. Pay. You can get Suica cards on your phone, and I've tried and failed, right. And for whatever reason, it won't bloody work. But so now I've started carrying my Suica card and using it to pay for everything, just because I've noticed I used to just get so much change in my wallet. At the end of every week, my wallet would just be rammed full of coins. And when I'm in the UK, I use my debit card, like everyone, and I use my debit card. There's still a little bit with debit cards,
right,
doing the sort of chip payments. They're getting there, actually. I'd say Japan is moving very fast in that direction, so that's encouraging. But I would still say, when you come here, always have some money in your wallet, because you never know when you're going to get caught out, right? Mm. So,
and some in your shoe.
Generally,
travellers.
Yeah, put some in your shoes.
Every Sunday afternoon, Chris would celebrate a fine weekend conquered by pouring an entire gigantic novelty Jack Daniels bottle full of coins off his balcony onto people below. And the local people would gather and gather it up.
God, how many people would die from the falling coins? That's another scientific experiment I don't want to try out. But yeah, it's nice though. It's nice not having like a massive amount of coins at every given moment. When I left my apartment in Sakata as a teacher, I had four huge tin boxes just packed full of coins, right? And I took them to my bank and I gave them to the teller, the clerk, and they shoved it in this machine and counted it out. It was a bit like Scarface when he counts out all the cash, right? He's like, push it to the limit. And all the money's being counted. But instead, it was with like 1 yen coins.
Nice.
And I got like $5 at the end of it. So not quite Scarface. No. Disappointing face. We've got a story here from V, who says, hello, Pete and Chris. V from Sydney, Australia here. Thanks to COVID, more companies are allowing people to work from any part of the world for a few months annually. Which cities or towns would you recommend digital nomading that aren't Tokyo, Kyoto, or Osaka? Keep up the fantabulous work, V. I'd recommend Sendai. It's a pretty good place. Mm. I mean, I keep running into tourists when I'm in Sendai, and they're so happy to be there. And I'm like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Why would you come to Sendai? We had like three attractions in Sendai, and you can see them in 4 hours. But to live, it would be a really good place to like live and work, because it is quite a bit cheaper than Tokyo, but you can get to Tokyo easily. And you can get to Hokkaido in 2 hours. So cool place to live, but maybe not visit. Sendai. So Sendai's top of my list. Where else, Pete? Where would you go if you could be a digital nomad in Japan? Probably Fukuoka, knowing you.
Yeah, love that place. Yeah, anywhere down like Kyushu, I think that'd be a fun little sort of place to kind of hang out. It'd be nice to sort of spend like 30 days somewhere and just sort of, and just that's your base. And you don't even need to travel out. Just enjoy the good vibes of a small town down in Kyushu or something.
Just go to the summit of Mount Aso and just sit there in a trailer. Or just get an RV. Yeah, my sister just got back from Japan, and she travelled around the country in an RV for 2 or 3 months, and she didn't have any problems apart from the time I think they opened their car door in the wind and it knocked another car.
Right.
And all hell broke loose. So be careful where you park. But other than that, it's great. I think RV could be the way to go. So RV, Fukuoka, Sendai, those are the big three. Those are the ones to go for V. We've got another one here from Kira. Kira Wells in Washington State, who says, hello, Chris and Pete. Japan's always had a good arcade scene, if I'm not mistaken. However, I can't help worrying about how it's doing nowadays, given a certain occurrence from a few years prior. How does the arcade scene in Japan fare today, and are the retro gaming centres there still thriving? Moreover, does the UK have its own arcade scene to speak of? Thank you, too, for your response and everything you do. Kira Wells in Washington State. Thank you very much, Kira. Do we still have arcades in the UK? My image of arcade games in the UK are just the crappy ones by the seaside, like the depressing coin machines where you win like 2p and some crap candy.
Yeah.
Are they still there?
We still have arcades near where I live in Southend, so I'm pretty adequately positioned to answer this one. Yes, we do, and it's mainly your 2p machines, but you do and you know, legacy kind of, you know, bike sims and Outrun and stuff. But you do occasionally sort of see games that like these kind of quite generic shooters that sort of arrive that are clearly been kind of made in the last 3 or 4 years. And they're just big plasma screens, cheap old light guns, and a bit of graphics. And it must be quite cheap. Compared to like what it costs to make games for the arcade back in the day and compared to what it costs now, you just need a nice big plasma screen. What's that? A screen like that, what's that? Like 150? Or maybe, you know, trade, pounds. Probably 100 quid. And then bit of wood, couple of guns. Just do that 50 times and you've got yourself a profit, my friend. You sell it for a grand.
Pete's dodgy arcade where the TV screens fall off.
But they're all like
the customers.
But then you'll have like games that like no one's like didn't know existed, like Halo, four person shooters, like in, you know, you're riding around the landscape shooting and stuff. And then you've got like the VR experiences as well that have come in, where you've got like the little helmets you put on and stuff, and you do like a Rabbids game or something, and it's, you know, for me, a man of advancing years, makes me feel a bit sick. But for everyone else, they seem to enjoy it.
I think you should open your own arcade. I think you'd be in your element, because you love video games, you love retro.
There's
why not just
a
open up a seaside arcade?
Did just that, a couple of roads away from me, he set up one, and he closed it down not that long ago. So I don't think I think location is important. And if you're on the seafront, South End, you're going to make a bit of money. But if you're a little bit way back, out in sort of Chalkwell way, it's not going to work.
I just think he doesn't have your vim and vigour and vision to pull it off. Yeah. But I think you could do it. I mean, in Japan, gaming centres are still a thing. Don't worry. I think a lot of people got spooked. I know they are closing. We had a story last year, I remember, where they were saying that gaming arcades are on their way out and numbers are down dramatically in the last decade. Yeah. And rather symbolically, of course, the iconic Sega arcade in Akihabara is long gone, replaced by Geigo. Geigo. Ugh. That name, God, it's almost as bad as Dr. Miso Shiru, what his name was. But it's gone. But for the most part, you can still find arcades in every street and corner of Tokyo and every city in Japan. So don't worry. They're around for a little while longer. They're still here. And there's some really great ones. There's a really amazing retro arcade place in Takada Nobaba, which is about two or three stops north of Shinjuku, and that's my favourite. And I think if you ask many people, like Pete, American Pete, who is a games fanatic to rival even the great Pete Donaldson, he would argue that that is his favourite as well. So don't worry, there's plenty to still enjoy when you do make it over here, Kira. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back later in the week, guys, to all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, please buy my book. Please,
please.
And we'll see you later in the week, guys. Do all over again. Have yourselves a bloody good one. Bye for now.
Bye.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Pete Donaldson, and if you're listening to this podcast, you may very well be a lover of video games. And if you are, I'd like to introduce you to VGC, a gaming podcast. From the team behind the popular gaming site Video Games Chronicle comes a gaming podcast for grown-ups, hosted by reporters Jordan Midler, Andy Robinson, Chris Scullion, and little old me, definitely not a grown-up. It's everything you need to know about games, and we're bringing you it first. Give us a try. VGC, a video games podcast. Listen wherever you get your pods, or head to lnk.to/VGC. That's lnk.to/VGC.
Broad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.